James, you pick up the story and tell us your views about what's taking place today.
Well, thank you for having me on again today. It's always good to be here to talk to your audience, and especially at this particular time in history where we see just such important things happening behind the scenes that if you were only reading the financial headlines, you might not pick up on. But we've been talking in recent weeks here about the divergence between economic reality and the political charade that is more and more driving the markets. And we've been talking about that in the kind of optimistic upside of the market swing, where markets have been going a bit crazy recently with some extremely strong markets in January, despite the underlying economic reality not really changing very much for the better. But now we're seeing the exact opposite of that. We're seeing the downside of these policies that are driving the markets this week, especially in the Eurozone, where it looks like the wheels are falling off of the pronouncements that were coming at the World Economic Forum in Davos just a couple of weeks ago, that economic tail risk had been eliminated and the world economy was back on track. Now the Eurozone is starting to show some more wear and tear and creaks and cracks, and it looks like some politics is getting in the way of the so-called Eurozone recovery. And that should not be a surprise to people who are looking at the underlying economic reality of the Eurozone crisis, but it's just another sign that, once again, it's the politics that seem to be driving the markets. So we see some instability coming up in Italy and Spain politically that's now feeding into the markets, and the Eurozone just suffered a huge loss, which has actually fed into the American markets as well. The S&P and the Dow are both down around a percentage point, the Dow about 9/10 of a percentage point, and the S&P 500 down by 1.15% today. So there is some...
But basically, Europe is staying viable only because they're pumping massive amounts of money into all those countries, money that they, I don't know, they're borrowing from us or where it's coming from, but it's totally fraudulent. It is not real recovery. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is James Corbett, who writes a regular article for the International Forecaster and has, of course, a publication of his own. And we, of course, enjoy having James with us every Monday afternoon. And we're simply talking about what's going on. And James is simply pointing out that if you look at the economy of Europe, the economy of Europe is not doing well, certainly at Davos a couple of weeks ago. They were saying how everything had recovered, everything was fine, things are getting better and better. And yet, of course, the market today simply tumbled. Now, of course, the stock market is totally manipulated, in my estimation. And certainly it was up Friday at, say, 150 points, something like that. And today it was, well, how far did it go down today, James?
Well, it depends what index you're looking at. But if you're looking at the Dow Jones, for example, down 0.9%, S&P 500 down 1.15%. In Europe, things are even worse, with pretty much stocks down around the board. So there's been quite a lot of losses across the board today. And this is all on the back of that political instability we're seeing in Italy. So and Spain as well, and Greece now, in fact, kicking up once again. We start to see, unfortunately, this is all too predictable, but just as the winter looks like it, we've gotten through the worst of it and the temperatures are climbing back up, so too are the protests and the strikes. So Greece has been racked by strikes this past week. There's been some islands that have been cut off by striking sea workers for the last 6 days. There's more protests happening in Greece right now, and that's starting to spill over into Spain as well, where protests are once again kicking up. So there's a lot of instability going on. One of the most interesting stories underlying this is a story about an Italian bank that's popularly known as the oldest bank in the world. It's called Monte dei Paschi di Siena. And it's been around since the 14th century anyway, but it has gotten embroiled in a scandal, a political scandal, that at least threatens to undermine the Eurozone, the entire Eurozone process right now, and it is throwing a significant monkey wrench into the works of the Italian election between Mario Monti and Silvio Berlusconi. And Berlusconi is now catching up with Monti. And although no one was really predicting Berlusconi would have much of a real challenge to Monti, it's looking like there could potentially be, depending how this scandal unfolds. So we'll have to keep our eye on this. This is an extremely interesting development.
Well, I don't think most people understand that the banking system is totally fraudulent. banks are able to loan money they don't have. Basically, they have $10 in deposit. They can loan $100, something of that sort, depending upon the reserve requirements. But if we could make money out of nothing like the banks have, we could all be fabulously profitable and wealthy. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is James Corbett, and James is simply talking about growing in political instability in both Italy and in Spain. And we're talking about demonstrations, we're talking about riots, we're talking about certainly some islands. I don't know the Greek islands or what they are, but they've been cut off. They're simply the people who ordinarily take care of shipping things have just said, we're not going to do this. And when you see the whole structure of society begin to break down, ladies, gentlemen, I think it foreshadows what is going to be happening here in the United States. Certainly, Jesse Jackson has suggested that they send troops to Detroit to begin to patrol the streets. If you go into Mexico, there are parts of Mexico today where the people have repudiated their local governments, and they've said, look, the government isn't doing anything, the military isn't doing anything, the drug gangs run things, and the people have actually formed posses and militias. And there's an article just 2 or 3 days ago pointing out that they're actually taking over segments of Mexico City. I should say of Mexico itself. Their people are forming posses. They're simply blocking roads. They're not letting people in and out without identification. And suddenly we see the structure of government in Mexico beginning to fall apart. We also see the structure of government in America beginning to fall apart. And of course, here's a call to disarm the American people. And yet, of course, we're moving into, I think, a period of political instability. And people are going to need those weapons to protect themselves and their families and their neighborhoods. Go right ahead, James. Tell us what your thoughts are as what's going on.
Well, interestingly enough, you mentioned Mexico. The Mexican Stock Exchange is one of the few exchanges in the Western Hemisphere, basically, that was up today. But that's just a momentary blip. But I want to get back to this Italian banking scandal. For people who haven't heard about it, it's about a bank called Monte dei Paschi di Siena. And this is related to transactions that they did to cover up some losses that they took when they acquired a different Italian bank back in 2008 for 9 billion euros. And they took some heavy losses on that, but they tried to cover those losses up with some fancy financial transactions with a couple of other banks. And the interesting thing is that just before they were due to get some of these massive bailouts from the Italian government under the current leader, Mario Monti, they did these transactions to try to hide their losses. So now when this scandal with this bank is unraveling and some of these transactions that they did are coming to light, it's not only threatening to take down the bank, which of course is a huge concern because it is one of the, or it's billed as the oldest bank in the world, and it is quite a large bank in Italy, but it's also threatening to take down Mario Monti and his government because it's a question of what Monti knew and why the government decided to give this bank bailout funds. It also implicates Mario Draghi, who people might remember is the president of the European Central Bank, but back at the time when the bank, this Italian bank was doing this transaction back in 2008, Draghi was the head of the Bank of Italy, so he was at least nominally the person who was regulating the transactions of this bank at the time that it was doing these questionable or perhaps illegal transactions to try to cover up its losses. So this scandal has the potential, at the very least, to draw in all of Italy and perhaps the Eurozone itself into it. And again, just coming at a time of instability in other parts of Europe, especially Spain and Greece as well. So we see that very much there's the Eurozone is back on the table as a potential zone of instability. And this is dragging down markets. And again, as you say, markets are rigged, and markets ultimately are just a reflection of consumer sentiments and other such intangibles. But once again, it shows that if there's political instability, which I'm very much predicting more and more of in over the course of the year, that definitely has an adverse trend on the markets. So even though we experienced quite an amazing January in terms of markets, and in fact, we had the MSCI World Index of Stocks rose 5% in January, which is the highest since 1994. But again, it's a question of what's actually underlying that. And as you pointed out last week, we got the news about the GDP contraction in the United States in the last quarter of 2012. 0.1%. And we saw some job data that was lower than expectations, although it's being billed as a great thing. In fact, even the GDP contraction was being spun as if it was not a very bad thing at all. So we're living in an economic wonderland right now, and there are little bits of reality that are bursting through. But on top of all of the bad news in the markets today, we see an interesting thing happening with gold, as it is rallying despite the fact that the US dollar is also rallying at the moment. So gold going up in value, even as the dollar is going up in value, shows that gold is spiking at the moment. And there's an interesting trend on the charts looking at the 10-year treasuries and the S&P 500, comparing that to gold price. It looks like those prices are converging, which looks like gold is converging on 1700 right now, which is a psychological barrier. It's been flirting underneath that 1700 barrier for several months now, and it hasn't been able to break through. This might be a sign that it's heading towards that. And if it breaks through, I think that is one of those psychological barriers for gold on the upside.
But basically, isn't this all manipulated? Certainly, Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan, these are all involved in this manipulation. Now, it's illegal to manipulate the markets, commodity markets. But after all, these are the people who run our government. People don't understand. They think that certainly the Federal Reserve System is a federal agency that is controlled by our government. No, that's not the way it is. The Federal Reserve is a privately owned central bank. It's owned by the major banks. And it is the Federal Reserve that controls the government, and our government officials do exactly what they're told to do. And if you think that Barack Obama is running the country, Barack Obama does what he is told to do. And do not believe, of course, that the things that are taking place are because Barack Obama is a hardcore Marxist leftist. He may very well be, but he does what he is told to do. And if he didn't, they'd take him for a trip to Dallas, just like they did with JFK. And when they were able to cover up JFK's murder, basically, they kill people all the time, all throughout the world and here in the United States. If you doubt that, you need to get our 4-CD set on dangerous assassins, where I actually talked to 2 government assassins who were recruited to kill people. One of them was recruited to kill a presidential candidate. He has disappeared. The other, of course, was recruited to kill a naval commander. How many people he did kill, he didn't talk about, but he talked about the people he didn't kill. He himself, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, is dead today. But be that as it may, we don't know. Maybe these were normal disappearances, normal deaths. But you need to understand that this is the sort of thing that goes on. And if you think Barack Obama is running America and all these things are his idea, I think you're sadly, sadly mistaken. You haven't been listening long enough. Well, basically, James, as you talk about these things to people, do you think they really understand that the stock market is manipulated, that the commodity markets are manipulated, that the price of gold and silver are manipulated?
I'm thinking that people are at least becoming more aware of this. Unfortunately, you're exactly right in your assessment. It is completely controlled, and the presidents have not been presidents for at the very least the last half century. And as we approach this year, the 50th anniversary of November 22nd, 1963, I'm sure we will be hearing more about that and about how Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin, and I'm sure that will be promoted and promulgated in the media. But that's another sign of the disconnect that people face, because upwards of 90% of the American public, even in polls that are done by pollsters, where people tend to lie on the side of what they think would be socially acceptable, even in those types of polls, upwards of 90% don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. So again, it's just a question of the media trying to feed people a line. People are not buying it. It's a question of when that breaking point will come between people's understanding and what we're being told. And interestingly enough, you mentioned the fraud that underlies and manipulates the entire market that as they exist. Well, it's just coming out this week. Apparently, Standard & Poor's will be facing a lawsuit from the Justice Department over their subprime ratings back in 2007. So after 6 years and the almost total obliteration of the world economy, the Justice Department is finally getting around to possibly slapping a suit on Standard & Poor's. Although Moody's is indicating that there's no reason to believe that they're under investigation themselves. So this is the extent of so-called justice in this day and age, where the too big to jails are unfortunately acting with impunity in all of this. And as you say, that's exactly because they are part of this system that is underlying this and that is telling Obama and all of the other political puppets what to do. It's really a system that's run by a select few banksters for the profit and the benefit of those banksters. And to think otherwise would be folly.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-295, if you have a call for Mr. James Corbett. Now, do you see an increase, the possibility of an increase in civil disobedience, civil disorder here in the United States? Certainly, as more and more people lose their jobs, people don't understand that now we have these wonderful new machines that are called robots. And they can do so much of the work, actually, of building cars that people used to have to do. In fact, you've seen the pictures of cars being built today, certainly by these robots. And so they need fewer and fewer people in the automotive industry. But this holds through to most of the industries where laborers, workers are simply being replaced. What's going to happen to these people? How are they going to make an income? We have so many people going to college today and coming out with college degrees. They got a master's degree, and they can't find a job, and they're working as a clerk at Kmart or at Walmart. And basically, I think more and more people are saying, is it really worthwhile going to college and getting a degree? And I come out, and there's just no jobs. Jobs are hard to get today as a whole, aren't they?
They certainly are, and you're exactly right to put the potential for future civil disobedience on the job market, because jobs are absolutely central to this so-called recovery that we've had in the past 5 years that we're being told is taking place. And we're being told that jobs are recovering. For example, they just came out, 157,000 jobs were added to the U.S. economy in January, according to the official numbers. But again, we've talked about this time and again, but it's important to know that just how manipulated those figures are. And there's a great post up right now on the Economic Collapse blog, economiccollapseblog.com, talking about these numbers, breaking down some of the statistics. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics, for example, shows that since 2000...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, we'll be right back. Well, James, you were talking about the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Go right ahead.
Absolutely. Since 2006, the Bureau of Labor Statistics' own stats show that the percentage of the civilian labor force that is employed over the past several years is dropping. So in 2006, it was 63.1% of the civilian labor force was employed. 2007, 63%, 2008, 62.2%, 2009, 59.3%, 2010, 58.5%, 2011, 58.4%. It's arrived at 57.9%. So it has dropped in the past 7 years from 63.1% to 57.9%. That seems like a downward drop to me. It seems like a steadily downward trend if I'm reading those numbers correctly. Also, the people who are not in the labor force is going up as an absolute number. Back in 2006, it was 77 million. As of today, it's just shy of 90 million. So that's an extra 13 million people not in the labor force. So it's important to keep these things in mind when we're looking at the phony, baloney, faked stats that they're trying to put out over the jobs markets. And it's interesting. It would be funny, I suppose, if it wasn't so serious to look at the ways that the media tries to pump up these job numbers as if they're so important and the markets rally accordingly, when really at the base of it, it is completely a fraud. And in fact, unemployment is growing, and no matter what the numbers are attempting to say.
And this is the tragedy. More and more people, if they lose their job, are having a much harder time getting a job today. And this is because we are intentionally shipping our jobs overseas. It's all about globalism. It's building up the economy of China by giving the people their jobs, by building up the economy of India, by giving the people jobs. Well, what jobs are they giving them? They're giving them the jobs that we used to have here in America. Because, you see, our leaders really have no loyalty to America as such. Their loyalty is to this globalist dream. If you doubt what I'm saying, you need to get David Rockefeller's memoirs and read pages 405, 406, 407, where he will tell you how we have raised the living standards in third world countries, in China and third world countries. The average American doesn't understand. This is part of the plan of the elite, because they want, of course, to raise living standards throughout the world, and the average individual doesn't understand the jobs we start overseas aren't coming home. In fact, I think as time goes by, we're going to be losing more and more of our jobs as people in other countries find it cheaper to produce there than it is here. And certainly with Obamacare, certainly that's another problem we have. And the tax system we have here is another problem. And basically, we are rewarding people who produce their goods in other countries by giving them a much lower tax rate. If you make your money overseas, well, you don't have to pay American taxes on it. As long as you keep that money out of this country, out of the American economy, you don't have to pay taxes on it. Doesn't that give people an incentive to produce overseas and keep their money away from the American economy?
It certainly does, and that's exactly what we've seen over the course of the last couple of decades. And again, this was perfectly predictable and predicted by many people, including even some of the insiders who saw what was coming with deals like NAFTA and GATT and then the World Trade Organization and all of these moves towards globalism. And I think it's important to keep in mind what the end goal of this is and what the economy under the globalist system that they're trying to bring in would look like. And we're seeing more talk these days, for example, of the United States. Should the U.S. kill the penny is one of the headlines up at CNN right now, talking about the idea of scrapping the penny altogether. Why do we need these 1 cent coins when it costs 2 cents to produce them? And they just don't seem to be useful in today's economy. So we see Canada, for example, is no longer...
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Eventually, you have to understand they progressively destroyed the value of our currency. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. And James is just simply saying that in Canada, they're going to stop producing the penny. Why? Because it's made of copper. And it costs a couple of cents to produce a 1 cent coin. I've heard the figures here in America, it costs even more than that. And to produce the 1 cent coin in Canada, they're talking just today about actually scrapping the 1 penny coin. There were some stories here about 2 or 3 months ago they were going to do that in America. And then somebody came out and said, oh, I put that story out. It was totally fraudulent. And basically, of course, that made people think it was a fraudulent idea. And it's simply part of the disinformation that they put out to manipulate us. Of course, they're going to do away with nickels and pennies. It costs them more than a 4 or 5 cents to make a penny in America. It costs them probably 10, 15 cents to make a nickel in America, because they've destroyed the value, certainly, of the commodities that go into those. They're simply eroding the value of everything through inflation. The average individual doesn't understand. It is all intentional. And, of course, inflation is the sure way to steal the people's retirement, steal their savings, steal the money they have in bonds, steal anything that is tied to the American dollar. And certainly the worst thing that you can have is money in the bank today, because it loses somewhere between 6 and 8% of its purchasing power every single year. They know what they're doing. But if you don't understand what they're doing, then you certainly are going to end up being impoverished. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is James Corbett, and we're trying to get people to understand what is really going on, and certainly the economy is not recovering, contrary to most of what you're going to read in the Wall Street Journal today, because the Wall Street Journal is simply part and parcel of the propaganda campaign of the establishment to largely control what the American people think. James, pick up the story.
Well, there you go. I think you're exactly right with all of that assessment. And I think it's important to keep in mind what it means that they're trying to phase out things like the penny now, and eventually the dollar bill will be replaced by a dollar coin. And what does this really mean? I mean, does it particularly matter in that scheme of things? No, but I think it is part of conditioning towards a cashless society system, which is, I think, one of the end goals of this system. I think they definitely want to transition us away from the use of cash altogether, this relatively anonymous transaction technology, as it were, to something that's completely controlled, tracked, traced, the database, and put in the control grid, and in which every single transaction can be traced directly to you and to say exactly where you bought what you bought and when you bought it and how much you bought it for, and all of that information will be databased least when they bring in the cashless society where everyone will use their cards or their chips or whatever it is, whatever technology they decide to bring in. And I think that's definitely what they're trying to transition people into. And part of that is to basically demonize cash, to make it seem like a strange thing, to make it seem like a useless thing, an outdated thing. Isn't it so much cooler to pay with your phone instead of paying with this clunky pennies and nickels and things like this? So I think that's what we're being transitioned into, and I think people have to be aware of what the end goal of this is. It's not about convenience. It's about the ability to track and trace everything that you do and to put that information into databases that are then controlled by government agencies that are definitely not acting in your best interests. And when we start to put it in that bigger perspective, I think people can see what is really the nightmare scenario that could develop out of this, where literally if a government agency doesn't happen to like you or is trying to hound you, they can simply turn off your ability to buy and sell through this card technology or whatever it is they want people to use. And that is the ultimate control over the economy, and that's unfortunately where things are heading unless we derail this freight train.
But the average person doesn't really seem to be concerned about the implications of what's happened as we move towards an increasingly cashless society. This idea where everything will be controlled and monitored by the government. Ladies and gentlemen, if they control the monetary system, if they can force you to use a credit card or certainly a bank card or certainly a numbered card, maybe a Walmart card or a Costco card, things of that sort. Or basically, of course, eventually everything can be traced, everything you do, every place you go. They can monitor you, wouldn't be able to go from one community to another without their permission. And, of course, what most people do not understand is there really are people who want to regulate every aspect of human endeavor, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. And I think we see this coming upon us rapidly. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And remember, of course, that certainly reference in the Bible, to the fact that there come a time, whether you need to buy or sell, lest you wear the mark of the beast or be known by the number of his name. Christians don't think that's going to apply to them. We're all going to be whisked out of here before anything bad happens, and I hope they're right. But what happens if they're not? What happens if this is a lie that's being put forward by the people who want to enslave the American people and neutralize the vast number of Christians in America into doing absolutely nothing? Our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is James Corbett. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But as the American economy begins to slow down, and basically they will tell you all the people that were hired over December, but ladies and gentlemen, those people who were hired over December were hired to work because of the Christmas, and basically the sales this Christmas were nowhere near what they had hoped to be. And certainly so many of the people who are being hired today are simply being hired to work for government, and government is about the only group expanding at all today. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Sydney James, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can subscribe to the International Forecaster and how they can get your publication as well.
Absolutely. Well, if people are interested in the International Forecaster, they can go to theinternationalforecaster.com, and there they'll be able to read some of my editorials and some of the other articles that are there in the Forecaster. Or if you're interested in subscribing to the full publication, it's about 40 pages coming out on Saturday, and there will be a smaller edition coming out every Wednesday starting this week, so people can look forward to that. And I will also be writing a market update for the Wednesday edition in addition to my editorial for the Saturday edition. So once again, that's at theinternationalforecaster.com. You can find out how to subscribe or get a free introductory issue. Or you can mail P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883, and you can find more details on how to subscribe by writing in as well. Or if you're interested in my own work, I'm at CorbettReport.com, that's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com, and I have thousands of hours of media, including podcasts and interviews and videos and articles that are there for your downloading, reading, listening, and viewing pleasure, completely commercial-free and free to the public. So I hope people will make use of that resource and try to make the most of this information.
All right, fine. Well, now, basically, Krista, where do you think we're headed at the present time? We're heading into a new year. Many people think that 2013 is going to be a pivotal year, but then, of course, people are always just saying, oh, something terrible is going to happen. But do you see any justification for that? Do you think that the things that are going on in the Near East, certainly the increasing tempo of violence over there, the increasing possibility of some sort of war between Israel and Iran, or Israel and Syria, or Israel and other of their neighbors, certainly Egypt would probably be much more of a threat to Israel if it weren't so totally disorganized today. Apparently the whole structure of government is ready to get a breakdown in Egypt. In fact, the ministers of defense recently said, the military said it looked like the whole structure of Egypt was going to collapse. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Egypt has been a stable country for at least 50 to 75 years. And we went in, it was certainly Americans who went in and toppled Mubarak. Oh, we can deny it. But, ladies and gentlemen, we are the force behind what's happened over there. The toppling of the government of Syria, the toppling of the government of Egypt, the toppling of the governments of Tunisia, the toppling of the government, certainly there in Libya. And this, we've also, as you know, toppled the government in Afghanistan. We've toppled the government in Iraq. And we're installing the Muslim Brotherhood throughout there, and the people don't want it. And this is leading to tremendous instability in Egypt. That whole segment of the world is certainly having more and more problems. And certainly, I fear that this unrest in that part of the world could spread to other parts of the world. But will this have any impact on the United States, James, in your opinion?
Well, not only will it, I think it already is in ways that I guess might not be apparent, but certainly are already affecting the economy. And of course, one of the big line items in the budget every single year is the Defense Department and spending on defense. And because of the threat of various boogeymen in East Asia, we've seen contractors reaping billions and billions of dollars in contracts with South Korea, with Japan, with Taiwan, with some of the other American allies in the region, especially for drones. There's a big market for drone purchases that are going on. And unfortunately, as you say, the North Africa / Middle East instability, that zone, that crescent of instability that's developing there, well, it's been remarkably effective in destabilizing government after government, I suppose, assuming that was the plan. And I think we can safely assume that was the plan, because as you indicate, even if Egypt is headed by a Muslim Brotherhood, it's not going to be any threat to Israel if it is deeply divided against itself, which the recent protests have indicated. It is a country that is still very much not at the risk of civil war per se, but certainly coming apart at the seams in a lot of different ways. And with the recent Israeli incursion into Syria for the bombing that took place near Damascus recently, that was a huge escalation in what's going on in Syria. And in one way, that could be looked at as an act of desperation on Israel, as the attempt to overthrow Assad seems to be failing and sputtering. But on the other hand, the way in which the U.S. unequivocally and immediately backed up Israel for that action has to be seen as a very worrying development, because, again, it just goes to demonstrate that if Israel ever takes it upon itself to start some kind of conflict with Syria or even with Iran, one could imagine that the U.S. would back them up immediately and unequivocally. And as people have been saying for years, that is definitely one of the indicators that we are on the road to World War III, if that type of event should take place. So a huge escalation just took place recently, and unfortunately, the world community doesn't seem particularly bothered by this Israeli aggression in Syria.
Well, I think they should be. Of course, from the Israelis' point of view, they claim that basically this was a convoy, and the convoy was carrying a plane, missiles of some sort, missiles that could actually take down the Israeli fighter planes. Of course, Israel's military control in that area is largely dependent upon their very effective air force. But now, of course, if there were weapons that could take down their planes, why, they would feel justified in destroying them, and that's apparently what this raid was all about, although it's hard to tell anything. Basically, we're being lied to consistently by our own media, which is covering up the truth, and sometimes you have to go to foreign media to find out what's really going on. But at least that seems to be one logical explanation we've had so far. Whether it's true or not, we don't know. All we know is what we read in the newspapers, and most of what's in the newspapers just isn't true. Well, the telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295. But I fear that a war in the Middle East, one way or another, America will somehow be increasingly involved in that. What are your thoughts on that, James?
I think there would be no way at this point for the U.S. not to be involved in such a conflict, given how deeply embroiled they are in the area. And we see that in 2014, supposedly, America is going to start withdrawing forces from Afghanistan. But again, it will be, if it even takes place, it will be something akin to what happened in Iraq, where, again, there are tens of thousands of contractors and other U.S. military advisors, etc., that are still there in Iraq. But of course, because the emperor, the commander-in-chief, Obama, has declared that combat operations are over, then I guess then it is over, according to the mainstream media. So people have to look for that type of sleight of hand. But because the U.S. is so heavily entrenched in that entire region, I think that there's no way for them to avoid becoming involved in any sort of conflict, especially involving a couple of main players like Israel and Syria. I think that would very quickly spill over into an international conflict. And you're right, the Israelis are trying to say that their incursion into Syria was to take care of a convoy. They say it was carrying chemical weapons or weapons that were going to be used by Hezbollah. They haven't provided any proof that I've seen or that I've heard of to that claim. Syria says it was a research facility. But even so, that just plays into the meme that's been floating recently that Assad is preparing to use chemical weapons, and we've seen a lot on that front. But interestingly enough, a leak from a British contractor called Britam, a leak of emails that hasn't been confirmed, so we can't say this for sure, but it has been reported that this leak includes emails that show that the Qatari government was floating the idea of planting chemical weapons to make it look like Assad was starting a chemical weapons attack as a justification, obviously, to start an international conflict against Syria. So, again, we see a lot of indications that things are heating up in that area, and that's one of the big wild cards for 2013, I think, is what will happen in that region, and will things be resolved in a peaceful way? And unfortunately, there's so many ways that this could devolve into some sort of broader conflict.
And, of course, the trouble is, people have forgotten it. Certainly with Assad, he may not have been an ideal person, he may have been a dictator, but at least there was stability there, and he did nothing to damage Israel, as long as Israel did nothing to damage him, and there was stability in that area. And now we've toppled all of that stability, ladies and gentlemen, the whole of that area, such as Egypt and Mubarak, Tunisia, Libya under Gaddafi. We may not like any of these leaders, but there was stability. And the last thing now we want is the chaos that's over there. And the fear is, of course, that this chaos will spread throughout North Africa. It'll spread into Africa. In fact, most Americans may not be paying much attention to it, but they recently announced within the last 2 weeks that we're sending our American military forces into 35 nations in Africa. So we're pulling our troops out of Iraq, at least some of the troops out of Iraq, and we're sending them to 35 nations in Africa. And nobody ever asks, why are we sending troops to 35 nations in Africa? Oh, we're defending America. And if you believe that, you believe anything. We're not defending that. We're taking over this country. We are imposing our globalist views on those nations. And the nations that don't go along with it, the leadership will be replaced. Well, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Mr. Corbett, because he's on the front lines of the economic situation as it exists in America and certainly throughout the world today, what do you think the 2013 has for the United States? Do you think that the economy will simply continue doing what it's doing? Do you think it'll grow and get stronger? Do you think it may get weaker and we may have more and more unemployment and unrest in America this year?
Well, it would be, as I say, it would be a huge change in the trends if unemployment were actually to shrink in real terms. Whether or not the phony baloney Bureau of Labor Statistics number is going to shrink is another thing altogether. But at any rate, I expect unemployment will unfortunately be growing. And this is on top of even this housing rebound, the recovery in the housing market that is supposedly taking place, where house prices are rising and residential construction is back on the upswing. And people have talked about this as a potential of an echo of the boom of several years ago, where basically consumer sentiment is still in the mindset that this is a place where they can put some of these extra paper dollars that are floating around because of the printing presses. As people have talked about in recent months, people are starting to vacate the bond markets where they have been investing for the last several years and are looking for other places to put it. Stocks are already overvalued. I think everyone kind of understands that. The Dow is shying away from 14,000 now. That seems to be another psychological barrier. So where is this money going to go into? Probably into the housing market, which accounts for some of this mini boom that we're seeing right now in the housing market. But I do think that there is a downside to this. I think that it is a bubble that is set to burst, and who knows what event particularly will set off that popping of the bubble. That's one thing we can't predict, but it does seem to be that this is not backed up by any underlying economic productivity. And as we say, if an unemployment is growing, then we can't put too much faith in residential construction to lead the way to an economic recovery. So there is a type of paper on the books recovery that's taking place right now, but however long that can be sustained, I think it is a bubble that will burst at some point when the economic reality starts to penetrate it.
Well, somebody wrote me an email this last week, and they wanted to know why, with all of this money that, of course, the Federal Reserve System is putting into the economy, and now the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is about $3 trillion. Why, with all of this money, why are we not seeing more in the way of inflation? Certainly, we know that the Federal Reserve is certainly buying about $85 billion worth of mortgage bonds and certainly treasury bonds every month now, and they continue doing that, flooding the money into the economy. Why isn't this leading to more in the way of inflation? What is your view?
Well, it's important to note that, as you say, that the Federal Reserve is printing up more and more money, but that is not going into the economy directly. That is being used to buy, basically, at this point, two main asset classes. One of them, of course, is treasuries, which is really just buying up the government's debt. And the other half of that is buying up these mortgage-backed securities, taking them off the balance books of the banks. And the theory behind that, at any rate, is once that is freed up off of the bank's books, they can have that money free to lend out to the people. But it takes two to tango, and there's only going to be a rise in credit if people are willing to take on more credit. And for years now, people have had a bearish sentiment. They haven't been interested in taking on more debt. But we see that turning around now, and we see a lot of economic indicators from the last couple of quarters showing that people are more and more regaining consumer sentiment. And as I say, with this housing residential construction boom and rising housing prices, supposedly, at least in nominal terms, the balance sheets of most households are rising. So people are more willing to borrow and spend. And so that might be the type of trigger for this to have an inflationary effect. Because, again, inflation only really hits once this actually starts to make its way into the markets. And so far at this point, it's been a lot of paper money on the books, but not really circulating in the economy.
Well, my understanding, and I want your thoughts on this, my understanding is certainly that the major banks are sitting on a couple of $1 trillion. This money's been deposited with them, and they're not lending it out. Certainly, you can borrow money, but you have to be a favored lender. And unless you've got all sorts of security, you can't borrow money. Credit is tight. And the same thing is holding true as far as many of our. And certainly, what are the banks doing with the money? They're depositing it with the Federal Reserve System. They're depositing the money with the Federal Reserve. They may only get 0.5% interest or no interest at all, but they'd rather have it there where they feel it's safe. At least this is what we're being told. And the same thing is true with our major industries. Our major industries are sitting on a couple of $1 trillion. And of course, all of these, and if you study what we talk about these covert organizations working behind the scenes, so many of the corporations, the banks tie into this, and they're really sitting between the banks and the and the major corporations on $3 or $4 trillion that is simply being kept out of the economy. If it ever went into the economy, why, we would have inflation, but they seem to be intentionally holding it out of the economy. And at least a lot of this is deposited with the Federal Reserve, which is why they have the $3 trillion under in their. I mean, where did the Federal Reserve come up with $3 trillion? Well, it's the money that's being deposited with them. What are your thoughts on that concept?
Well, I think you're exactly right on that take. It ultimately amounts to what actually gets into the economy, and that's ultimately dependent on the banks and the people who are willing to take on debt. And if the banks aren't willing to lend and or the people aren't willing to take on debt, then that money doesn't start circulating in the economy and it doesn't have an inflationary effect. But the other side to this is once people start getting out of those treasuries where they've been holding their money in a quote-unquote safe place and start putting it in the markets, that is going to start driving things up. I think that's part of what's been behind this rally in the markets recently, and that's part of what's behind this residential construction boom. And that's where we're going to start seeing a lot of the money pouring into, I predict, in the coming months.
And I think it's like 2008 all over again, 2007, 2008, a prelude to what I think is going to be another bust. What do you think? Do you think we're going to have another big bust here one of these days?
I don't see how we can avoid it in the long run. It's just a question
of
when.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Pardon me for interrupting you, but of course I don't run the program, the computer does. You go right ahead, James, you were just saying.
No
you
problem.
See how we can avoid it?
I don't see how we can avoid it in the long run. I think that day of reckoning is going to come at some point because we can't have run-ups in the market like what we saw in the past month at any rate with the biggest January in 20 years. We can't see those types of run-ups without some sort of underlying economic growth. And when we do, that is a sign of a bubble, that there is a bandwagon effect going on right now. And it is a question of when and how the piper stops playing and people have to pay up. And again, that's impossible to predict. There are so many different things that could set that off. But I think it's just a question of when, not if.
So what should people be doing with their money? Should they be investing it in bonds? Should they be investing in speculative companies, hoping that one is going to find a good one? Should they be putting money into gold and silver? What should people do with their life savings at this point? Because basically, of course, you just put it in the bank, and you may get back, 1% interest. But down the line with inflation, eventually you're going to be wiped out. What should people be doing?
Well, I couldn't in good conscience recommend anything that I wasn't doing myself. And basically what I'm doing for myself and my family is all of the savings that I have, I'm trying to invest in physical gold, silver, and platinum and other precious metals. I think that's the safest place to house your long-term savings. And obviously it's a question for each person to come up with how much do they need to sock away for long-term savings, how much do they want in short-term savings, and how much do they need liquid so that they can keep actually transacting in the economy. And that's a balance that everyone has to reach for themselves. But in the long run, I think, once again, precious metals has been the gold standard, quote-unquote, for thousands of years in terms of investment, and I don't think that's going to change. I mean, I think that ultimately the ups and downs in the gold market is just it's not actually ups and downs in gold, it's just ups and downs in the price of the dollar. And again, that's just a fictitious number that's created from so many different things. So I think ultimately gold, silver, and other precious metals are where the real store of value is. And if you want to save your long-term savings, I think that's the place to do it.
And I think it's so foreign to the way most people think. But at this time in history, I think that we have to think differently than we did before. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, again, it's the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So we definitely do need to think outside the box that we've been presented, at any rate, in the mainstream.
Well, God bless you, James. We're certainly looking forward to having you with us again next month, next week at the same time. And thank you for being with us, and great program as always. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.